What's up and welcome back to another Kinda Funny weekly review and reaction. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
What up, dude?
Making his return to Kinda Funny content, we have Canada's secret weapon, Matt Rohrbeck.
I like that. Thank you for having me. Love that. Thanks for having me.
And speaking of weapons, we, of course, have the weapons arbiter himself, Chris Anka. How's y'all doing?
Boys?
I feel good about that, you guys.
That was really good. Had I known you were going to go that hard, I would have gone harder for my intro. I'm sorry.
I feel like I failed you.
Let's do it again.
And of course, we have the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Let's criticize some art, god damn it.
Hell yeah, art is what we will criticize today, because today we are talking about The Green Knight, A24's The Green Knight. Of course, we will give our spoiler-free reviews in the beginning, let you know if we recommend that you go out and watch this movie, and then we'll get into full spoiler territory, but we will make it very, very clear, because this is Kinda Funny Reactions, where each and every week we review the latest in movie and TV. Next week, we're returning with the return of Marvel Studios, Disney Plus TV shows, Marvel Studios, What If? Very exciting. We'll be here each and every week giving our reactions to the episodes as they come out. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also, next week, we're returning to The Bad Batch. We're going to do a full season one review. It'll be me, Roger Picorni, Barrett Courtney, and whoever else wants to join us that has watched season one of that show. Very fun, cool stuff. But enough about all that. Of course, you can watch the show on youtube.com/kindoffunny, roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Reactions, and we'll be right there for you. And if you wanted to get the show ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, and you can do just that. So, boys, we're here. We're going to talk about what is my personal movie of the year so far.
Whoa.
The Green Knight. But I don't want to start off. Chris, I want to hear what you have to say about A24's The Green Knight.
I think it's a brilliantly made movie that I don't think is for everyone. I was personally whelmed. I think I went in, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. And I think what the movie prioritized were not things that I personally was very interested in terms of filmmaking, but I still think it's something that everyone should give a shot of, and I don't regret seeing it. I almost want to watch it again, but it didn't do anything that blew me away.
Would you recommend going out to see it in theaters?
Yes, if you can. Don't I wouldn't recommend. It's not like a movie that'd be like, oh, you know, go risk yourself for.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Depending on where you live. Yeah.
If it is safe, would you recommend people go see it in theaters?
Yes. Just for the sound alone. Mm. You know, I think the sound design was so phenomenal in this that I think being in a really high-end theater sound system is definitely worth it.
Kevin, what do you think?
This movie was weird as shit. You know, but it's also like exceptionally beautiful. Everything seems very, very thoughtful. I walked out of it and I was like, it reminds me in a lot of ways of like the movie Donnie Darko, where it's like, I don't know if I like that movie. I need to watch it more. I either love it or hate it. And I haven't super decided. I'm definitely leaning the more on like loving it. But like I definitely walked out and I was like, fuck, I would really want to watch that again and possibly in 4DX if that's an option.
4DX, The Green Knight.
Smells alone might be interesting, yeah.
Right? it was a spectacle for sure, and that's what I was hoping for. And yeah, I think I was a little underwhelmed with the story aspect of it. But I have been thinking about it a lot, and I kind of feel like that's the whole point of it, right? So like it nailed that part, I think.
Would you recommend people go watch it in theaters?
If you're like, you know what, I like artsy fartsy movies. Like if you hear that term and you're like, you know what, no, that's not something I need to do. But if you're like, yeah, I've seen a couple artsy movies that are pretty cool, I'll go check it out. It's like, then definitely check it out, because this movie is a hell of a spectacle to watch. I am, though, very excited to also watch it at home because I think the hue lighting will really add a lot to it.
Matt Rohrbeck, you have your own movie podcast, the Untitled Movie Podcast, which I featured on the latest episode. You can go check. Where can people find that?
A podcast services, untitledmoviepodcast.com. You were on our 97th draft yesterday where we touched on The Green Knight, but we talked about the movie industry as a whole. But guys, I think we have the greatest Arthurian tale since Michael Bay's Transformers The Last Knight. Come on, guys.
At the very least, that is a fact.
I'm kind of in the same boat as both of these guys here, like where I think going into this movie, I'm not the biggest medieval or like fantasy guy, but I really love kind of A24, what they're doing and what David Lowry's been doing in his filmography. So I kind of went in with mixed expectations of going, okay, the medieval stuff, the fantasy stuff, not really my thing, but I'm totally here for some weird fucking movie, whatever this is going to be. And then leaving it, I feel in a similar boat where I felt like I loved it. It was a visual spectacle, but the story left me kind of underwhelmed. But I just didn't know how to feel about it, just like Kev said. And but then the more I sat on it and the more I thought about it, the more I talked about it with like my co-host on my show, Eric. And I just thought about the cinematography, the score, the costume design, the production design, the sound design, and like all of that stuff just kind of blew me away. And then when it came to, you know, this classic tale, I thought it was very simple, but then somehow made it kind of convoluted. But then the more that I dissected kind of each scene as we kind of go through the film and I thought about it and sat on it, I'm glad I didn't record our review like right after, because I feel like I would have been more on the negative side, but more appreciated it than enjoyed it. But now the more I thought about it, the more I talked about it, I end up going from like, I don't know how to feel about this movie to like, I think I really, really loved this movie. So, and I do, I'm in the same boat where I want to see it again. And I planned on doing it yesterday, but couldn't fit it in. But yeah, I think it's a visual feast that I think should be seen in a theater if you can, if it's safe. But expect a challenging pace and a simple story that I kind of lost me at times because it has this hypnotic kind of state that it put me in where I kind of zoned in and out of consciousness, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I just want to start off. I highly, highly recommend watching this in theaters. I think that that is the only way that I would have enjoyed this movie. I think that you need to be all in or else it is not going to be for you at all. And, you know, I can see myself watching this at home on Netflix or something and checking my phone. And like, that would have just, I mean, if you looked away for a second, this movie, for as weird as its pacing is, it's moving and a lot happens. And if you kind of blink for a second, you might have missed like some crazy shit that just went down. But what I really like is it's never this, everyone here, I think, except for Chris, used the word spectacle in some way. And it's like, what I love about this, and you might have, Chris, I'm sorry if you did, but
no, I didn't, but I'm like, oh, I'm a trendsetter, you know, I don't like to follow the pack.
Exactly. But like, what I like about it is we normally use the word spectacle for like giant action set pieces and you know, like kind of crazy levels of CG or whatever, and you know, CG or otherwise, just like there's a scale to the action, right? And this movie doesn't have that, and I think that kind of works to its benefit, where it allows the world to really, really, really speak for itself as a character. And what I enjoy the most about this movie is it really kind of feels like a deconstruction of the hero's journey, fantasy, reality, all of those things at once, while not being as trite as I just said that, like it kind of like worked for me where things are practical, like seeing the Green Knight and the way that he's this lumbering tree man, when he moves, the sound design of him sounding like a tree creaking, it grounds the fantasy in a way that you're just like, oh, this is what real life is here. And I think that that works really well as the movie goes on, where you're in these different areas and landscapes and things are happening that in another movie would have just been kind of like, oh, okay, like this is just another moment, become these magical set pieces here, because the scale isn't about him swinging a sword harder, stronger, faster, but it's instead about like, what's happening around him and him just being this tiny little dude in this giant world. And they thrust him into so many crazy situations, like right off the bat, like without spoiling things, like some of the initial confrontations he has are just like, holy shit, we're going here there like so quickly. Okay. I do think it's definitely more Blade Runner 2049 than it is Star Wars. And I think that that's hard for people to wrap their head around, because it's not for everybody. And I'm surprised it's for me, honestly. Like, this type of stuff, medieval, is not my jam whatsoever. Yeah. But there's just something about the way that this movie kind of plays with the idea of legend, where there are multiple elements throughout the movie that don't feel consistent. And it almost feels like different character point of views are consuming the story differently. And I think that that's built into the narrative they have going here, and is backed up with different things that we'll get into in the spoiler side of stuff. But like, it plays with your expectations of, oh, well, the character got drugged. What's that going to do to him? And we expect one thing, but the way they go about it, I think, is really smart. And again, deconstructing our expectations for the narrative of what you guys have all said is a very, very simple story. But I think that this movie only works because the story is so simple that there's kind of a lot of different paths of interpretations you can take that are equally valid, because they add up perfectly. And I think that that is the strength of this movie. When I finished watching it with Kevin, I would have watched it again right then. I was so ready to go back and get some answers to, and again, I'm not trying to act like I understood this movie. I didn't, you know what I mean? But I enjoyed it, and I enjoy kind of like thinking about it to the point of trying to understand it. And I feel like over the course of the last week, since first seeing it, I have come to conclusions of what I think the movie's about, what it's trying to do. And I did go watch it again, and I'm fucking blown away again. I left it being a little like, I don't know if I'm as high on it as I was the first time, but just like you guys are saying, the second time, now that I'm a couple days out from that, I'm just like, fuck no, I love it even more than I thought I did. So yeah, definitely highly recommend watching this movie and paying attention. And it might not be for you, but I think that it's worth giving a shot, even if you think it's not. But now
I had a friend who described the movie as like walking through a museum. And I feel like that's very apt, where there's a bunch of very beautiful set pieces, and you kind of have this sort of slow pace through it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you sort of enjoy everything that's happening, enjoying everything you're looking at, but it's not meant to be rushed through. And the movie is sort of, and I think at least for me, the detriment was, is the movie is dictating how slowly I'm going through it. Because it's funny, like, I think I guess I'm the one person here, I love medieval, I love gritty period pieces. It's kind of all I really want to like intake. And so I was hoping for a much grittier movie. And I was kind of taken aback at how sort of tender this movie is. Like, it's a very, like, despite, you know, being an Arthurian tale, it's a very soft movie. And I mean that in the best of ways. And so I think in sort of the fact that the whole movie is about tenderness and sort of the subversion of, like, you know, the hero's journey is everyone being very compassionate and like empathetic towards each other, and in some good ways and some bad ways. But it definitely sort of like caught me off guard, because I was like I wanted to go, like, when we get, like, we're getting into mud, I'm like, I'm ready for some like real hardcore shit. I mean, we never really get there. And so I think a second view definitely would probably help me with that.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I like how slow the movie feels to you, because for me it's kind of the opposite, where one of my favorite things about it is the pacing of the movie. Like Tim was saying earlier, it feels like so much is constantly happening, and the whole not theme, but like everything about the movie feels like it shifts. Like, suddenly it shifts, and it's like, oh, we're in like a horror house. Like, why is it like everything is creepy and scary? Or, you know, like everything is like screwed, or, oh, everything is suddenly peaceful, and like we made it into this new place. And I just feel like it so rapidly like switches between almost genres that it like kept me on my toes. And also, like, I didn't need to go to the bathroom, but it was one of those things I could feel like, if I'm not paying attention, I'm gonna miss stuff that's going on. And it just does so many random weird things that, like, it, on further reflection, kind of build like a narrative. But like in the moment when you're first watching it, you're just like, I don't know what's happening? What is this? What's all, you know? So I think that the pacing for me was something that I also wasn't prepared for it. I thought it would be have more action, I guess. I'm not entirely sure what I thought I was going in to watch, but like it certainly caught me off guard and I enjoyed it. Yeah,
totally. And you know, jumping off of that, kind of like with what both you guys are saying, I said this before after my first watch of the movie, but like this is the best Legend of Zelda movie we're ever gonna get.
I was gonna bring that up too, man.
And like what I feel about it is like it's Legend of Zelda, but like with a Game of Thrones kind of like level of maturation. I think like definitely in terms of the sex and kind of the themes and the violence without the action sake, but just kind of like, I would describe this as a violent movie, even though there isn't many acts of like fighting or anything, but just kind of like how it all feels and like the stress. And Kevin brings up horror. There are horror elements of this that I think are really interesting. But yeah, it is very, very cool how you're just kind of in this world that has less dialogue than more, and because of that, when there is dialogue, I think it really stands out, and I think that they use their words so wisely to lead us to believe something and understand this world that we're in. And it's like, I love how many dope ass quotable lines are just being dropped every freaking time some character is speaking, and it feels like it fits this world that they've built. So it's like I enjoy that, because I normally am I like quips. I like action. I'm a simple dude. You know what I mean? But like this, I really, really enjoyed like their use of making sure that the words meant something and were only used at the appropriate times.
Yeah. And to jump off your Legend of Zelda comment, Tim, I thought a lot of 2018's God of War as well, a little bit, in taking kind of like well-known mythology with King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and this story being interpreted multiple times, but then kind of taking it and deconstructing it and turning it into a completely kind of original kind of thing. And then I like that video game kind of hero's journey to the whole thing, where it is a very simple quest or game that this like Gawain has to do, but then it kind of, you know, strips him away of everything and he has to go on these side quests to earn back his stuff. And we'll get more into it in spoiler territory, but like I just thought that was so cool, and it did remind me of kind of a video, weirdly like a video gamey kind of movie throughout, even though it doesn't feel like that at all. So that might sound weird, but anyway,
I think just because a lot of video games are just like based on like these kinds of legends. So you're just doing the same journey, but like you get to control it rather than you're watching it or hearing about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now we are going to get into full spoiler territory. So if you have not seen this movie, or, you know, if you don't want to be spoiled, go away now. Otherwise, let's get full into it. Matt, take it away.
I don't know where to start, but like one thing I really did love though, getting into the spoiler territory, I guess jumping straight into the ending of doing the La La Land thing of like kind of showing you what could have been, but I'm gonna do something a different way. And I like, because I was with you guys where I was confused at times because I was so hypnotized by the movie, where I kind of was falling in and out of consciousness, like I was saying, where I missed stuff of being like, how the hell did he get his axe back? And I'm like, did I just miss that for a second? I'm like, oh, where the green girdle thing, or like Alicia Vikander playing two different characters. And I'm like, is it the same woman? I'm like, I'm just like, am I dumb? I'm like, I don't know if I'm not getting this. And then I'm glad that I kind of sat on it and thought about these things. But I like the moment where Barry, I think it's Keegan or Keigo's character, kind of steals all of his stuff and ties him up. And you kind of get the foreshadowing that, you know, he, when they kind of do that slow kind of pan and then it shows him as a skeleton all tied up, being like, if I don't get out of this thing, I'm going to die. And then kind of goes back. And then I thought originally, I'm like, is this whole thing like in his head now? Did he die in that moment? And everything showing us like what could have been if he was courageous and was able to complete his journey. But then they kind of do it again at the end there too. So I think it's just foreshadowing to that moment. But yeah, I think those things of like those side quests we're talking about of Aaron Kellyman's character, who we just saw in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that whole sequence in the horror sequence Kevin was referencing is dope. And yeah, there's just so many cool moments, Tim, like you said, where if you really kind of sit down and think about it from set piece to set piece, and they're not these big action set piece, but each kind of little side quest he does, I think was cooler than the next thing. It's just I needed to take a second to think about it all and go, oh, that was actually cool as a final thing. Anyways, that was a lot, but
Well, jumping off the ending, it's you go, Kev.
I was just going to jump off the ending conversation because I think that's why I enjoy the movie so much, but it's also why I'm questioning whether I love it or not, because I thought it was so cool that he had this vision of like the path that he would live if he ran away and, you know, essentially took the path without honor of like forsaking the whole game that they were playing, living, going and seemingly lying to everyone, giving up his love, then becoming king and following that path until the moment where he decides like the fight's over. There's no reason to like keep myself alive. And he removes the sash. And I thought it was so cool that it cuts back and he's hasn't made the decision yet, but now knowing that like he's going to end up giving up everything he really cares about to go down a path that leads basically nowhere, might as well die intact with his honor. So he takes off the sash and it's like, oh, what a cool moment to like have him really prove like his character, right? Because like all of the knights and everything back then, the whole idea is like you're nothing without your honor, right? And then he does that and the knight does the like, oh, good job, boy. And then he's still like, we end with that like the off with his head, which I think made such a like, it, like the tone of it was so weird and it all seemed like very jokey. It seemed like we had a really good serious moment that could have just ended with him being like, good, you know, and not giving us any more, just any more certainty whether or not he's still dying or not. But I feel like ending with the like comical off with his head thing like really leaves me in a position where I'm like, I don't understand that last little bit. Like what was the,
is it more that the Green Knight is saying you're taking that you didn't have to go this route? Cause he could have said like, just kind of nicked the Green Knight, right? Like he didn't have to behead him right at the beginning. If he actually heard what he was saying of going like, I will give you an equal blow, but it's almost this imposter syndrome thing or wanting to prove yourself to everyone or what Tim's saying, legend, and wanting to be this thing and living up to this thing. So he goes, I'm going to slay the Green Knight and chop off of his head. So I feel like maybe the Green Knight at the end is just kind of like, is kind of being like, it didn't have to be this hard, man. Like you could have kind of gone a different route out of all of this. And it is ultimately, I guess, about just living up to those expectations and the courage and stuff like that too. Yeah.
This show is brought to you by MeUndies. You know how when you're in a nerve-wracking situation and people say, imagine everyone in their underwear to make yourself feel comfortable. As if imagining a room full of strangers down to their skivvies is what makes us feel comfy. MeUndies believes comfort does not start with imagining, but instead it starts with actual comfort. MeUndies designs limited edition prints all the time so you can express yourself every single day. Building your undie collection and picking out which lucky pair gets to meet your butt for the day has never been so fun. Choose prints with corgis, chicken nuggets, your zodiac sign, goofy puns, and more. MeUndies also releases collabs with some pretty big names like the Rolling Stones and Space Jam, A New Legacy. But you have to grab them fast because once they're gone for good. Kinda Funny loves MeUndies. You've heard the boys talk about them for years. They're comfort with good designs that make your friends jealous. To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. We're also brought to you by Faherty Brand. Can it be? It's finally summer, and we're actually going to have a real summer this year. So naturally, we've started thinking about looking good after a year and some change, because we're going places. This summer is what Kinda Funny is calling Hot Boy Summer. You saw the jean jacket, you see the haircut, we're doing it big this summer. And that's where Faherty comes in. They make the perfect clothes for the summer. Tim Geddes is the most stylish person I know, and he even loves Faherty Brand clothing. And they're so confident in the quality of their stuff, they have a lifetime guarantee of quality. They'll replace or fix your clothes forever, no matter what. And to top it all off, Faherty is giving our listeners 20% off. That's right, 20% off. So stock up on all of your clothes for summer now. Head to FahertyBrand.com and use code MORNING at checkout to snag 20% off all your summer gear. That's code MORNING at Faherty. That is FAHERTY brand.com for 20% off. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Upstart. If you're carrying a credit balance month after month, it can feel like you're in a never-ending cycle of debt. Upstart can help you make that final payment so you can get ahead. Upstart is the fast and easy way to pay off your credit card debt with a personal loan all online. Upstart knows you're more than just your credit score and is expanding access to affordable credit. Upstart considers your income and current employment to find you a smarter rate for your loan. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. You can receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/KFMB. That is upstart.com/KFMB. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/KFMB.
Chris, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I don't remember there ever being a movie in recent memory that the very last scene was what made or break the movie for me. Like, when it was just the whole future sort of scape, I was like, man, if you are going to commit to this, I hate this movie. And then once it cuts back and he takes out the sash, she's like, oh, good job. I was like, oh, thank God.
I love that they showed it though.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that they showed it. But I was like, if that was the note that you were going to end on, that he does give into his shame, which is kind of what the actual story is. It's kind of both. That if he does give into it, I was like, I hate the last 2.5 hours of my life. But the fact that we jump back and he does overcome it, like even in the fact that the overcoming the sort of whole issue of the story for him is just this little like bit of his shame and his courage, and it's such a soft moment. I love that. It's interesting because like just listening to Kevin talk about it, either the off of his head at the time, I took it as like he was telling him to get out of here.
Yeah,
like get your head out of here, like off of your head, go. Or it could be like, okay, well, now I'm going to take my swing, like off your head. But like, it could be what actually happens in the thing where he does just nick him. So it's like, I'm still going to do the thing, but it's just like, I'm not actually going to do it now because you proved yourself to be courageous. It was just sort of like, I love that whole kind of jumping forward sequence. I thought it was brilliant. And no dialogue. I mean,
that is my favorite thing about the movie is the idea that like I do think it is up to interpretation, and I don't think that's in a lazy way. I think it's well designed that you can, like I was saying earlier, whether you want it to be off of his head is literally taking him being like, well, fuck it, you're dead, like you idiot, or take it as like off with your head, like this is comical. Yeah. I'm going to let you actually go back and you've proven yourself or whatever. Both of those stories perfectly line up with the narrative that the movie presents to you. And I think that goes back to what I was saying of like playing with our expectations and the idea of legends changing and all that stuff. Like there's a moment where pretty early on before he leaves, where there's the drunk guy at the bar and he is going up to him. He's like, oh my God, like this is the dude. He chopped it off with his own axe and whatever. And I love that like already this is getting out of control. This legend of Gawain is wrong. Like he didn't use the axe, he used a sword. And there was nothing epic and dope about it. It was kind of cowardly. And
kneeled
like
kneeled before him, yeah.
Exactly. And it turned into this thing that's already gotten out of hand. And I love that they set that up so early in the movie, because as it starts to go on, we're introduced to all these elements that as the audience, we're kind of like, is this in his head or is this happening or is this some magic? And those elements don't add up chronologically in a way that makes sense. We get the fox really early on in the movie, at least seeing it. But later it's semi-implied that the fox might be somebody he knows and like mom, somebody that I is think. Like the, well, I mean, it could be the mom, but it also could be the Aaron Kellyman character,
right?
With the red hair and things of like trying to help him along the way as it goes, and especially the fact that she later is like, you know who the Green Knight is. The Green Knight is someone you know, and it's like, what does like clearly she's connected? Why is this random ghost girl that's been beheaded know him, know his journey, know what he's doing? How does that axe come back there? And then to keep going on later, he gets that whole vision of what the future could be. And then in the middle of all this, he does the mushrooms and the drugs happen. I love that that's in the middle of the movie because it throws everything off, where it's like all those things that you could write off as, oh, he was just drugged. It's like, no. And we also get the vision of the skeleton. Like there's so many elements in this movie that are like, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, but there's evidence to support all of it, which I think is the strong suit of it all. And like to me, having rewatched it, my take is the plot is the mom sees that her son is fucking up and believes in him, but isn't sure if she should believe in him. So she does create the Green Knight, and she does form this whole quest for her to go out. And the entire thing of the game isn't just about the Green Knight. It isn't just return the blow as you do it. that theme is carried throughout each of the different environments they go to, of him doing something and taking the exact same thing back later in the weird Lord house, when the guy's like, I'm going to go out and hunt and I'll give you whatever, anything you get here, I want. And he's talking about the sash, right?
Yeah.
But then he's also talking about the little sexual encounter he had with the girl, which is why he kisses the Lord, because he's giving back what he took. And it's just like, I love that he was like trying to be sneaky and trying to get away with it. And it just like shows so much growth from this character, but also he's kind of a scumbag. And like, it isn't until those final moments where he's with the Green Knight that he's like, I need to be honorable and I need to come through with this. And like,
yeah,
it's really cool stuff.
And that's why that moment's so strong when he takes the sash off. And that's why I kind of like the very, very end. I know it's so silly to be so fixated on a line, but that line really pisses me off, because it, like, I feel like that moment had a joyous tone and then they went so far with it where it's like, I don't know. It kind of broke the tone of that scene for me.
And I think, Tim, you nailed it too, because I was thinking of the same thing as I kept thinking about the movie. And you see the mother, like, at the beginning doing that kind of circle creation kind of thing. And then, like, each test almost feels like they do such great world building with the rules that they kind of set up with, you know, different creatures or magic and different things like that, that it almost feels like each thing thrown at him could have been real or could have been this, you know, mystic kind of quest that was sent towards him, of like the beheading. There's something there because he beheads the Green Knight, so trying to find her skull and bring it back to her. And each was like a chivalrous kind of challenge to him to prove his worth, or like for him to be a better person kind of thing, of helping people, to Chris's point too, of being like more tender and more thoughtful. And then going into, you know, throwing this woman, and going back to the Alicia Vikander double casting, which confused me at first, but then that kind of proves your point, Tim, I think, a little bit, of these tests are being put towards him and they make this woman look like his love back home to make those advances kind of easier for him to give into. And that's another test that he ultimately kind of fails because he gives into it. And I just think that's interesting, where he doesn't deserve the sash at the end and should have given it back. But yeah, I think that's a really cool interpretation of it.
And adding to that too, in the Lord's house, that whole scene, there's a couple cool things where it's like, in the original story, and Chris, I'm sure you have a whole lot more to say about this than I do, but like, the Lord is the Green Knight in the original story. So
they,
it's like,
imply that at all here? I don't know. Like,
not necessarily.
No,
but it's like,
I don't think they do.
Either way, I think it's really interesting that when you look at just the house, or just like the, when they're in that, whatever you want to call it, the character's there, because we have Gawain, we have the lady, we have the Lord, who could represent the Green Knight himself. And then we have this woman with the bandana over her eyes that doesn't say anything, is never addressed. She's just there. So I think that really strengthens the idea that the mom is behind this, as clearly shown in the beginning of the movie, but that she is behind all of these little moments along
challenges,
the way.
Yeah.
To your old Tim, to your point of the legend getting away from it, it reminded me of a scene that I loved when I first saw it. I didn't think of it until right now. When they're painting the portrait of him, like to bolster the legend, and they paint him white, of like, this is how kind of it all starts getting away from him, and how the story starts changing. Like, he's literally getting whitewashed immediately. Yep. And like, the story is getting, you know, transformed at the bar. And so like, nothing, he has no onus over what's actually happening over to him. And to the point of even like all of this sort of chivalrous tests, he's chivalrous because someone sort of forces him to be chivalrous.
Right.
You know, the ghost, like, no, I want my head. Go down and get my head. And he does it, but it's because she told him to do it.
He literally says, what are you going to give me? And she's like, why would you ask that? Why would you ask that?
Oh, so God, powerful. Such a good moment.
Everything at the Lord's house is like, someone's doing it to him and he gives in to all of it. The kiss, the sexual encounter, the sash, it's all just given to him, and he just sort of takes it. So he doesn't really make a decision until that very last scene. And that's the first moment where he's like, oh, I actually can't control myself here.
And what's really cool too about the painting, real quick, that I want to say is, and I didn't catch this till the second time I watched it, but the Lord when he gives him the fox back, which is, I also think is interesting that he gives him the fox back, where it's just like, who is the fox? What is this supposed to represent along the way? But and especially for the fox to be given to him and then literally 2 minutes later go away for the final time. I was like, huh, that's a choice. A good choice, I thought, because it was very interesting. But the painting, when the Lord is giving him the fox for the last time, he's just like, when you're done with your journey, we're going to be gone. This place is not going to be here. You know, this... just don't come back. It won't be here. But then in his vision in the future at his throne, he has the painting behind him that they did from this Lord.
Yeah. Yes.
So I just think I think that's really cool where in his vision, he found this place, even though it should have been gone and it should have not existed. And he says all the stuff here will not be here. And I'm like, that's really cool. I don't know exactly what it's supposed to represent, but I think that's really cool. And the one other thing that I have no idea about that I need to watch the movie again to try to get is the little thief boy in the beginning of the movie. He like grabs his like collar for a second, and it's not like a glowing gem, but like there's like a blue something or other on his like necklace that like he does something with, and I don't really understand what it's supposed to be. Like the easiest answer is just, oh, he's just scavenging the dead bodies around and whatever, but like the way he holds it and what he does, like it almost feels like he was signaling somebody else of like, hey, he's on his way or something. But I don't know.
Yeah, and to jump off both of Chris and Tim's point about the chivalrous challenges, and I think, like, again, to be a knight, like, he's not a knight when he goes out and does this stuff, but you have to live up to that chivalry and that code of chivalry. And I think, ultimately, I guess he fails every test, to what Chris was saying, because, like, and what Tim was saying, too, of, like, you're supposed to just do this for, you know, to help people or for the greater good. You're not supposed to want something in return. So immediately when he asks, what are you going to do for me? He immediately is failing there. So I think that's kind of cool. And then what Chris was saying, that he doesn't live up to that until that very last moment. It's dope.
Yeah. And with that, I'm really interested in, like, the line that she has before that, where she's just like, a lord came and killed me. Was it you? It's like, what's going on there?
Yeah,
it almost could be like, well, I think the current thing of like it's another knight, like someone that's... that you want to be. So is it in theory? Is it you the same as the person who came and killed me before? Or are you going to be that guy again?
Right, I think that's exactly right. Where she's like that the place that you hold so high in your mind might not be as high as you think, because someone of that same stature. I think it's also. The moment with Barry, the guy that robbed him, I can't pronounce his last name. But
I think it's Keo or Keegan or something like that. Yeah,
Keegan sounds. I think I've heard that. So anyways, that was interesting because he also fails. Like, he gets captured immediately, like starts like basically trying to beg his way out, and it is and then he gets everything taken. He can't even defend himself in that situation. It's just so it's interesting that he like failed everything until that last moment.
Did you guys see that tweet with the photo of that kid? And it's like, whenever you see this kid in a movie, buckle up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's so great. He's in Eternals coming up too.
Buckle up. Yeah. As the villain.
Buckle up. Yeah. A couple lines I want to shout out, because God, like both times I saw the movie, I was like, fuck, this is some dope shit. And it builds to what I was saying about how there's not much dialogue in this movie, but when there is, it's fucking great. King Arthur being like, tell me a tale of yourself so that I might know thee. And he says, I have none to tell. And then Guinevere goes, yet. You have none to tell yet. And I'm just like, okay, cool. This is hype as fuck. But then I love that the movie then just goes like, all right, well, the story's not going to go the way you think it is. But I love that when, even in that same scene, Gawain goes, I fear I'm not meant for greatness. And the king goes, we all fear, but fear can be a gift. And the queen says, do not waste this. And I'm just like, y'all are just building such a strong off point that leads to his girl when he's having the conversation with her. And he's like talking about greatness and honor and all this stuff. And she's like, why greatness? Is goodness not enough? And I'm just like, I love this idea that like there's a mediocrity that isn't necessarily the worst thing to strive for given your situation, and that you might not need to hold yourself to the standards of everyone else, but that still doesn't mean that you should be a piece of shit. Like you still need to better yourself, and you still need to not give up just because you're like, I'm not a knight, but it's like, you still should be something more than what you are.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Sean Harris for being the king, because I feel like he's always a villain in movies. So just it was like unsettling to have him as King Arthur. And like, I just kind of liked his presence as King Arthur in this, like this kind of guy who's not the King Arthur that we know from all of these stories. He's kind of at the end of his kind of life and stuff like that, too. I thought that was really cool.
The actress who played Guinevere, because it's like after The Witch and Game of Thrones, I'm like, I'm waiting for her to do something.
Yeah.
Like, wait for both of them to just start doing some shit.
The cast in general.
And she was that's so good in The Witch.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say I thought it was really interesting that there's we all either knew the poem or looked into it, cuz like they make no allusions to who these people are. Like they just call him the king, the queen, and it's like we know it's King Arthur and that's Guinevere and his mom's Morgana, right? Like
and Merlin.
Exactly. There, yeah. And it's like, I didn't even put Merlin together till afterwards, like the guy with the tattoos. I just thought it was such an interesting thing for it to be so subtle with that.
I thought that was great. And I think that that's something that actually made me like really enjoy the movie a lot more, where there weren't these like winks and nods and like, you know what this is. And it's like, if you know, you know. And it's not like the most subtle thing, but like, I like that they made the choices that that's not the point of this movie. This is Dev's story. And like, they're just going to let him speak for himself. And like, they don't need the marketing of King Arthur and like things that we are familiar with to push this and like to push what this movie actually is, which again is a deconstruction of a lot of that stuff. And is kind of like trying to forge its own path, which I think is evidenced by this not being a one-for-one telling of the original story, like it kind of having kind of more modern sensibilities of kind of social commentary and just like the idea of who these people are and their place in the world and all of that.
I think we'd all be open for an A24 Arthurverse now, you know, so just tell me more stories in this.
Sure, the Clive Owen one is already perfect, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly, yeah.
Why go for more? But I one last thing I do want to say is I was talking earlier about how this movie is really good at setting up set pieces that would be just kind of whatever in other movies and turning them into these like magical moments. Like seeing the giants in any other movie would have just been, oh, here's another thing. But in this, it felt like because we hadn't seen anything like that, and I didn't expect to see something like that based on the iconography and just kind of world that they built. It simultaneously surprised me, and I was like, well, I should have expected this because we were just at a ghost house where the lady had her head chopped off, and then, you know, we just had like XYZ, all this stuff happened, and there's this little fox dude, and then boom, there's these giants, and they don't help him. I thought that was just so cool that they don't help him. It's not this big like back and forth conversation or whatever. It's just like, I love that, like, to talk about the video game stuff. Like, what I think changes this from just being, well, video games are based on legend, and legend, you know, kind of like I'll fill into it. It kind of feels like a video game in the sense of like, you don't take every quest, and sometimes you talk to people, you don't have the right item, so it doesn't like allow you to go down the path that you want to go at that moment or whatever. And I really related to that. And that's just me taking my own bullshit into this as not a fantasy lore expert in any way. But yeah.
That's interesting, because that moment made me trust the little fox way more, because the way the fox like protected him, I was like, oh, that like some shit that's not good was about to go down with that giant.
So I was talking to one of my friends I saw the movie with the second time, and he was talking about his interpretation of it all and of the fox in particular. And he had the read that the fox was either Aaron Kellerman's character or the mom, but either way was magically trying to protect him and was him for a reason to guide him, which totally adds up. But that the fox was yelling at the giant like, no, don't help him. He has to do this by himself.
Okay, cool.
Which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I like that. Quickly, did anyone stay for the post-credit scene? Because I did not, and didn't know that there was one until
know there was one.
Because I didn't expect it at all. And I went online, and I was like, wait, a post-credit scene? And then I have it right. So it says a post-credit scene shows a young girl finding the king's crown and putting it on her head. And I'm like, there was a post-credit scene about a young girl putting King Arthur's crown on her head. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I'm like, and I had no idea that this movie of all movies would have a post-credit scene. So I did not stay for it. But
yeah. I would have thought I do not want a sequel to this whatsoever, but you just saying that, I want a fucking sequel now. Let's go.
I don't know what that means, and without seeing it, I don't know exactly how it was shown. But
well, I will say we just went 37 minutes without bringing up the word nut, and I think that that's interesting for this movie, which definitely featured the most unexpected nut scene I've ever seen in a movie.
Let's not call it that.
I mean, Call Me By Your Name had one too, so I don't know. I don't know about that.
I didn't see that.
No peaches in this.
I didn't see that. But from everything I know about that movie, I think I'd expect it more than this movie. But yeah, I don't know. But
I just like the way it ended, where she just like looks at him, and just like, "You're no knight," and it's like, "Oh shit!" Like, okay, yeah.
Gave in.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the daughter, without seeing the daughter, he has a daughter with the woman he actually marries in his future. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't happen.
It could be that is what happens still.
Now he's kind of maybe
a version of that future, of that future where he doesn't end up with Lisa Vikander. He ends up with this other woman and has a daughter, and the daughter will then become the queen.
Mm. I kind of feel like though it has to be different because he would have felt like he earned it if he walked away you know what I mean?
Some semblance of that life is what is going down. Like, he does end up with that, at least that woman is who he's arranged with and kind of still has that daughter.
So he never makes Alicia Vikander his lady.
No. That was the scene that I checked out with him. I was like, this woman loves you and she's willing to lock you down before you're even anything. And you're just sitting there silently. I was like, I actually don't give a shit what happens to you now.
Yeah, you are a fuck boy, dude.
Well, speaking of the giant, it kind of goes back to what Kevin's thing about Merlin. What I really liked about the movie is that it's just fantasy enough. The giants are just big people. We're not seeing this big fantasy creature. You're seeing just a giant person. And it's the fact that like when they show Merlin doing magic, when the Green Knight first shows up, it's just the red light. That's him changing into a different thing. And I don't know if you caught it, but when he's swimming down for the skull in the lake, it all goes red.
Yeah.
Like someone's intervening and like trying to. So I like that there's just enough visual clues that there's just fantasy. It's just part of the world, but it's not enough that really is going to take you out of it or make it World of Warcraft. Like it's just heightened plus one enough.
Yeah. But
how can you guys just made me love this movie even more? I swear to God.
Definitely want to watch it again. I did not expect to talk this much about it.
If you haven't watched David Lowery's other stuff, like in 2017, he made a movie called A Ghost Story. I don't know if anyone's seen it here, but I fucking love that movie as well. And it's a similar kind of hypnotic, slow pace of a movie that's very poetic. It's just about life and loss, about, you know, a man who loses his life and is stuck inside his home with his, you know, now widowed wife, that he's a ghost and he just has to stay in this house for the rest of time and just see the new people who live in it and just time go by. And it is fucking awesome. Has another great score. And like, David Lowery's one of those guys that fascinates me because he can jump from like studio stuff, because he did Pete's Dragon, he did The Old Man and the Gun with Robert Redford, but then he can go and do this kind of A24 art house weird stuff. But he still, I tweeted this yesterday, brings this kind of thoughtfulness and poetic nature to these movies on both sides, and makes that studio fare like elevated a bit because of him making it. And he's doing Peter Pan and Wendy next for Disney Plus next year, so I'm only stoked for that movie because he's doing it. And I really suggest people go watch A Ghost Story, because it's awesome, and I think it's my favorite David Lowery movie compared to this. So I love this still as well.
Looks like
A Ghost Story is really dope.
In the U.S., it's available on Netflix. So
yeah, it's Prime awesome there on your Canada, list. Yeah, it's cool. I don't know. It won't be for everyone again, because I feel like it has a challenging pace like this movie, and you might just go like, "What the hell is this?" But like, I don't know. It has a really cool concept and a great score and visuals, and it's shot in a kind of square, rounded square cinematography, because he said he wanted this character to be stuck in this box for the rest of his life. So it's just kind of visually really cool too.
Interesting.
Anyways,
I
mean,
before I let you guys go, I started this off saying that this is so far my movie of the year, and I was challenging myself over the last couple days to really think that through, because I've seen a fair bit of movies both in theaters and just at home, and I think this is easily my number one. And I realized that my number two is A Quiet Place too. And then after that, I feel like there's a pretty significant drop off to Fast 9 and then other things.
Don't laugh, all right?
I mean, just being honest, like Fast 9 is not nearly my favorite Fast movie. So it's just like, it's, you know, it's, it was a lot of fun, but like, I don't think it's on the same level of the other two I just said. What are you guys, where are you at? What is your movie of the year so far?
You want to start me? I can go if you want.
Go for it.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this yesterday, Tim. If you consider Bo Burnham's Inside a film or a movie, that is my favorite thing.
That would be number
year.
One, then. Yeah.
It did have a theatrical release, and I do think it is very cinematic. But The Green Knight, like I said off the top, like I think when I finished the movie, it wasn't even in my like top 20 movies of the year. And then the more I thought about it, it started creeping up my list, and I have it up on Letterboxd right now. And I have it, like I liked things like Mitchell's versus the Machines. There's a movie coming out on Apple TV Plus called Coda in a couple weeks. That's fantastic. Shiva Baby, Plan B. I loved Pig with Nicolas Cage. I thought is fantastic for another kind of slow burn meditative movie, but Green Knight's definitely in that top 10, and Quiet Place Part 2 is in there. Judas and the Black Messiah, if you consider that a this year movie, depending on if Oscar stuff, but Tomorrow War I really loved, but Green Knight definitely is in that kind of top 10 for me of the year. But there were, I think there's been quite a few good kind of flicks coming out this year.
Chris, what about you?
I think for me, I wouldn't say it's probably the best film I've seen, but for in terms of my favorite, I think it's probably Wrath of Man, the new Guy Ritchie movie.
Right. Okay.
As someone who, like, I adore Guy Ritchie, he's probably my favorite live action director. It felt so different for what a Guy Ritchie movie is that I kind of like, it's just so intensely serious, and that's so weird for Guy Ritchie. Like, there's none of the quips, there's none of the fast like pacing and editing. It's feels like him doing an experiment, and I think he nailed it. And I saw it three times in theaters.
Wow.
I was blown away by like what I was seeing. But the one that I'm looking forward to, that I'm hoping will take the cake, is a movie called Antlers, which is a horror movie. It's been delayed for 2 years, and
it's a bummer.
I've been so hyped for this fucking movie,
and Antlers is weird and dope. Yeah,
hopefully it still lands. But that's the one I'm hoping to take.
Wait,
cake.
Did you say the date is October?
Yeah, it's coming up. Probably,
okay. Yeah, because I check on that film like every like 2 months. I had not heard of The Wrath of Man. This is really interesting because I'm a huge Guy Ritchie fan. What was his last movie? Was that
Gentlemen?
I fucking love that movie. So
yeah,
I'm interested to watch this. I think for me, kind of a boring answer is A Quiet Place 2. It really helped that it was the first movie experience that we did since quarantine kicked in, and also, because of that, there was only like 4 people in the movie theater, maybe 6. And I was on edge the entire time. Anyone would make a noise, like I'd eat popcorn or something, and I'd be sitting there being like, shut up. And yeah, you get lost in the moment. And like, I think that's the best thing that a movie theater can do. I think that was probably been my number one so far. But I've been not great about watching movies this year.
I mean, I think I've heard it too much, but I think what was fantastic about Quiet Place 2 is somehow you made a sequel that didn't tread over any of the same material that the first movie did. And that's rare for a horror movie as well.
Like, yeah.
Especially a gimmicky horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the fact that everything feels different. It feels a bit more action-y because now you know the monster. But then you still found ways to give me brand new scares and brand new ways to be tense that the first movie didn't do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Matt, where can people find you?
You can find more of my work around the internet, but mostly at untitledmoviepodcast.com. And then on podcast services, we have 3 different podcasts: Untitled Movie Podcast, similar to Screencast; Untitled Movie Reviews, similar to this show; and then Untitled Movie Conversations, which is our interview show. So you can go search for those on any podcast service, and you can follow me on all those social medias, Letterboxd, Twitter, at Matt Rorabeck.
Chris Anka, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Christopher Anka, or usually I'm in Stoneback Mike's Twitch chat.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. All right. Well, till next time, let us know in the comments below what you thought of The Green Knight. And I love you.